This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show trainers listen to. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from historic Saratoga Racecourse in Saratoga Springs, New York, and extending a very special welcome to everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide on our website, on your smartphone, or your tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. You know, each week I have the privilege of visiting with so many of the people that make our sport a success. I tell you that every single Wednesday evening here on the program. And tonight is certainly no exception, and it seems appropriate that we would be sitting here at Saratoga, the oldest racetrack in the country, because there's so much history here, and there is so much history associated with our guest this evening. And I want to welcome the 49-year-old who was born in Gettysburg, South Dakota. Now, if you're not familiar with Gettysburg, that's a town with a population of just over 1,100. But he didn't spend much time there. He was actually raised in Laredo, Texas, and he has gone on to record more than 7,000 career wins, 7,078, which ranks him second all-time among North American trainers behind only the late Dale Baird. His runners have earned more than $230 million in purses. And if you're wondering about that, well, it ranks fourth all-time among North American trainers. He's counted two Preaknesses and five Breeders' Cup victories among all of those wins. And he's a two-time Eclipse Award winner. And it is an absolute privilege to welcome trainer Steve Asmussen to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Welcome, my friend.
Oh, I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you here. And I guess you've come a long way since that first winter in, what was it, July of 86?
Yes, quite a ways from them. I believe, as you mentioned, our first winner in 1986. I think for the year I had 15 starts and one win and $2,300 in earnings. You know, not a time to give up my gallop job, right?
Yeah, could you ever imagine it would end up here? I mean, in your wildest dreams.
I just truly blessed. You know, You rattled off some of the accomplishments, and I think of how fortunate I've been to be associated with some of the all-time great racehorses.
Yeah, there have been so many, and we're going to talk about them as we move throughout the program here today. You know, I was thinking about it, and I made a note, and I just want to read this to you. With your 7,000-plus career victories, your name is now etched alongside Dale Baird, King Leatherberry, Jack Vanberg, and Jerry Hollendorfer as the only trainers ever to amass more than 6,000 wins. Now, you and Dale are the only two to ever go over 7,000. When you think about that, it just has to put everything in perspective, doesn't it?
It is, and I'm very proud of the accomplishment. But in racing, especially as a trainer, very appreciative of the opportunities I have. But that is a tremendous amount of work by some great help, And I think our organization, with Scott Blasey and Darren Fleming and Pablo and Toby, just so proud of the work that they continue to do, and none of this would have been accomplished without you go to mentioning names and you're leaving hundreds off the list that have so much to do with it and the pride that they should have in what they've gotten done.
I've had so many trainers tell me that on this program, Steve, that they don't do it alone. They're the figurehead. They're the public figure that people see, but it's not all about Steve Asmussen.
Not inclusive. And the winning, that makes the winning that much more special, the fact that you get to share it with those kind of people and the pride that they have in the work that they do.
When you start getting into a large stable like you have, and you have horses all over the country, what are some of the biggest challenges that come with that?
Getting horses in. I think, racing's spread out to a point where you can have a plan in your mind where you want to run and when you want to run, but getting it to actually happen, it becomes the issue. I feel that, our job is to keep horses in good a shape as possible. You're not making them better than they are, but you want to use their races as efficiently as you possibly can. And the biggest issue is getting them in when they need to be in and when they're ready.
You mentioned so many of your assistants that are helping you, and I know it goes even beyond the assistants. And as you said, if we start mentioning names, we're going to leave people out. But
right.
What's that communication like between you and your assistants? How often are you in contact with them? Constantly.
Constantly. You know, multiple times a day, and you're just your sounding board thoughts, plans, what you're trying to get done with each individual horse, and what you think will be their best spot from a timing standpoint, from a competition standpoint, time of year, the whole nine yards.
Your 7,000th career win. You hit that milestone earlier this year,
right,
back at Oaklawn. And I know that you were a couple wins away going into that day. You swept the first two races on the card, got it out of the way,
right,
in true Steve Asmussen fashion right away. Take me back to that day, and it had to be extremely special.
Well, it is. You mentioned the trainers that have won those kind of races. When I first started having any success on the racetrack, kind of at a national level, one of the first, Richard Hazelton, was one of the first people that are really trainers that tried to simulate and learned a lot from. And he at the time, I think he was four. I think he's over 5,000 or something. And I remember at the time or something, he was at 4,000 wins. And I was thinking to myself, that's 100 wins a year, 40 years in a row. How do you do that?
Wow.
I mean, it just and Richard's extremely helpful person. Just very gracious with all of his guidance and the ins and outs of the racetrack. And then later on, pretty good friend Jerry Hollendorfer and stuff, and all the wins and the consistency, and I'm to be mentioned with them is a big honor to me.
What's the key to being able to do this year in and year out and maintain those high levels without really going through a significant slump?
How much you like it. I mean, it's where you want to be. I mean, for me personally and stuff, it's where you want to be. You want to be at the races. You want to be at the barn. It's your comfort level. It is your oasis. It's the place that I personally would rather be than anywhere else.
Yeah, every trainer that's been successful at the level that you've been successful, and again, there's only one more successful than you, has told me that this is it. This is a passion for them. And when I ask trainers, typically at the end of the program, I'll say, okay, what is it that you like to do outside of horse racing? What other hobbies do you have? And most of the great ones, Steve, they say, this is it. I love this game.
I think very fortunate. I'm the youngest in a racing family. I grew up, mom was training and my dad rode. And, and me and Cash always were at the barn, worked at the barn. And the sense of family, the sense of community, when you get something done, is something that is tremendous to share. I'm, so proud of Julie and the boys, Keith and Darren and Eric, my family, immediate family, and how much they, a part of it they are, and how much they enjoy it. You win together, you lose together, and it gives us an amazing sense of unity. And I don't think there's anything better than that, personally.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the beginning. You mentioned coming from a racing family, and you were kind of born into this. It's in your pedigree for sure.
Right.
Your mom and dad still have an operation down in Texas, Laredo,
correct? Laredo.
Yeah, and, of course, Asmussen Training Center, and they're dealing with a lot of things down there as well, very successful in their own right. Your brother Cash, a tremendous jockey. You wanted to follow in his footsteps at one point, didn't you?
Well, my father rode until his 50s, and, you want to emulate your father and stuff. I have one older brother, as you mentioned, Cash, who is an amazing talent, always was, just follows in dad's footsteps. They're just, to see them as horsemen and how they relate to horses is truly special. Just feel for what a better upbringing to be who I am, as far as a trainer and stuff, to be associate, be around that kind of horsemanship day in and day out, and just amazing what you pick up just by being awake.
Yeah, I'm sure it definitely is. And you brought up a point before we came on the air here today. I was going to ask you about Bill Mott being from Mobridge, South Dakota. And here we are talking with two of the greatest trainers, talking about two of the greatest trainers in the history of the sport, both hailing from South Dakota. I don't know what the heck's in the water up there, but
exactly.
It's working.
It was, you say that, my father-in-law, mother-in-law, my wife's parents, obviously, they're from Mobridge as well. And back My father-in-law was the Grand Marshal of the 4th of July parade there a few years back.
Really?
I went back for that, and me and Bill Mott were riding in the Mobridge 4th of July parade.
That's outstanding.
Yeah.
Steve Asmussen here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So when did you officially move to Laredo? How old were you?
I think I was two when my parents moved there, and they've lived there ever since. I definitely don't have much memory of South Dakota other than my birth certificate.
Was there ever a time when you thought about doing something else, or was it always horse racing?
No, we're Asmussens or horse racing all the time. And in Texas at the time was a majority quarter horses, you know, the fair meets on the weekends, and that my father's always started a lot of horses, a lot of young horses that have traveled throughout the country. And you know, that's where I started our association with the Winchell family. And, you know, it was very, at a young age, even when I was still in school, you know, I was lucky enough to be around some champions and some amazing animals.
Tell me about that relationship with the Winchell family. It's obviously worked out wonderfully for you and your family.
Oh, absolutely. It started with, you know, Dad doing the early training on a lot of their yearlings, of their homebreds. And at the time I was in school, I think, you know, maybe 8th, 9th grade, that far back. And I remember Vern at the time would come down with Ron and inspect their yearlings fixing to turn into 2-year-olds a couple of times a year. And just a lovely man who had a great amount of pride in his horses and a lot of success with them.
What advice did your dad give to you as you were growing up and you were telling him, hey, I want to follow in your footsteps, I want to be a jockey, and then, of course, eventually wanting to be a trainer?
No, I can't talk about my relationship with my father without, you know, what he means to me without getting emotional. I couldn't even begin to start to put that into words. It just, I just know how lucky I am.
Yeah, it certainly is. And your dad doing a tremendous job down in Texas. And I assume that he's been your biggest fan and biggest supporter all along as well.
No, it's a tie, him and Mom. You know, they don't run a horse, they don't watch.
Do they come to the big races?
Whenever they're coming up this week, you know, we get them to get Mom and Dad out of Laredo to come to the races and stuff, you know. And it's been some great memories for, you know, them to share in the victories by Curlin and Rachel Alexander and stuff like that. And, you know, I think that we all get a little age in us and stuff. We try to get more of those memories in as many as possible.
How about Cash?
You know, like we said, Cash is just tremendous talent. You know, I go to mention in the races that he's won and in the stats that he's had. It's just mind-boggling, you know, the races that he's won, the travel that he did. I, for me to end up where I'm at, I think it's extremely fortunate that Cash was the older brother. You know, to think of somebody who, you know, at the time, we're in Laredo, Texas. You know, Riddos Downs is the top of the world, you know, the All-American, that kind of,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of what you're aiming at if you can think big. And then you got, Cash to come out of there. First win at Sunland Park, you know, he's leading rider in New York, I think like 79 and 80. And to go from there to go to a, you know, to have that kind of success from Laredo, Texas, Webb County, that's as good as you would think it'd be. And he, you know, he can think out of the box enough to, you know, go to a foreign country. He doesn't even speak the language. You know, he's a 5-time Golden Whip Award. He's got that adventurous spirit about him. He's always been that. And I've just been very fortunate that he is my older brother, you know, to let you know what anything you can think of doing is capable.
People don't realize that you started as a jockey, right? You did that for a few years and then finally got too big, couldn't ride anymore.
Right. You know, like I said, my father rode into his 50s and stuff in my smaller people. It's me being this size is the surprising part. You know, why would you be a jockey? Six foot two plenty, you know? But when you're a kid, you don't know when you're going to quit growing, you know, so it would have been extremely obvious for everybody to think I was going to be a jockey and stuff. And I love the fact that I had that experience. I love that I did get the chance to ride, you know, a little bit on the New York circuit and stuff. And obviously I grew out of it fairly quickly, but I'm, you know, glad to have had that opportunity.
Has some of that experience that you learned riding helped you now with training horses?
Immeasurably.
How so?
Well, you know what the stories are, you know? I mean, you see a lot of the, you know, the quote-unquote friendships and what it actually is. You know, it's a business relationship, and, you know, I think that people respond to honesty. You know, just tell the truth. You know, get what you want out of it, and you know, be honest about it. I mean, quit pretending you're getting along. You know, we're trying to get something done here, and you know, make it a business.
When you finally realized that you weren't going to be able to continue as a jockey, that you were going to be too big for that career, was it an immediate decision to go into training horses, or was there a gap there somewhere?
Well, I think the lack of success. You were always, you know, you were. You know, you're struggling when you're riding, when you're struggling with your weight. You're always, you know, you're getting on horses, and you're still a part of it. And, you know, and I was just very fortunate to, you know, just be able to fall into working in my mom's barn at the time, and you know, and trying to expand from there.
Seems like you made the right decision.
I don't think that I could be have gotten done what I've gotten accomplished what I would without the failures of other things. You know, I'm just definitely with somebody who learns more from doing it wrong than doing it right.
So Steve Asmussen made a few mistakes here and there.
I think we all have it, and I don't think we're ever done. When you mentioned some extremely, extremely impressive stats, you know, when you look back, but who's looking back? We're looking forward. You know, I think that racing is an extremely unique sport in that respect. You know, you see, you know, Bill, you know, fortunate enough to know him, you know, Hollander and stuff. They're competitive. They're not worried about. They're not celebrating the win they had yesterday. How do we win today?
Yeah.
You know, and it's great to be a part of that. And that energy doesn't leave you. And you just, you're right. When you look back on it, yeah, it's great. But now what we're worried about is the one today.
I love what you said about looking ahead, right? And I remember standing next to you at the Keeneland sale last September down in Lexington, Kentucky. And I said, hey, Steve, what do you think about coming on the program doing a trainer talk show with me back in September? And you said, let's wait, because there's still a lot more to the story to be written. And I thought that was a phenomenal way to put it.
It doesn't feel like we're halfway there. It doesn't. I mean, we're getting better at what we do all the time. We're learning more. You know, it's a very humbling sport. I mean, you can get everything you thought you wanted accomplished. And when you get there, you see what's next. You're just looking over the ridge. You've got more to do.
What still motivates Steve Asmussen after all this success?
How good it feels to win. For however long it lasts, you know, when it happens, it's a great feeling and you want it again.
You had a stretch where from 2000, well, I guess it was what, 2009, 7, 8, and 9, you're really rolling. You trained the horse of the year in three consecutive years those years, and then you led all trainers in annual wins seven times. You hold the all-time record, you know, for wins, as I mentioned, in a single season. It's just been an amazing run. But when you were going through that period and things are really clicking, what is that run like?
I can honestly say you're more surprised by the ones that get beat than the ones that win. You are. You're not like, wow, you know, you're doing it to win, and that's what you expected to have happen when you did it. You look back and I can't believe that horse got beat.
Yeah.
I can't believe that horse got beat. It's not a surprise to win when you expect it.
Well, you're still more than, what, 2,300 wins behind Dale Beard. Can you stay at it long enough and keep up the pace to catch him?
Yeah.
Or is that something you even think about?
You don't think of that, but you know, health be willing, yes, of course.
How long does Steve Asmussen want to train?
Well, I mean,
as long as you can,
as long as you want to breathe, you know, I mean, as long as you want to make yourself happy, you know, it'd be like a penalty not to.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing about this sport, the way it just kind of gets into your blood? And again, every great trainer has that drive and that passion. It's all about passion.
I definitely think so. Yeah. It's my feeling, you know, me personally, and the experiences that you have, you know, you went to school with your friends and you talk to them periodically, and they're talking about the vacation they went on or the one they got off. You know?
Yeah.
And I guess we're just on a permanent vacation, I guess, because this is where you want to be.
How about keeping all the balls up in the air with all the different stables all over the country? We talked about all the help that you have, but how does that work with your family? You have, you know, the three kids, and then you have your wife. How does it work with all the travel and keeping that together?
Married the right woman, you know. Julie's a tremendous woman, and I think that, as I mentioned, you've known her a majority of my life. No surprises, everybody, you know, and she's done an amazing job with the boys and very proud of who they are.
Your parents obviously didn't discourage you from being involved. They wanted you involved in the horse business, and it sounds like you're the same way with your kids.
Well, I think, like you said, it's either you have the passion or you don't. And the kids, you know, they love to be around it. The oldest one, Keith, has worked the last two summers up here, and just, you know, it's, he don't wait for you to get him. You know, he's gone. You know, it's just where he wants to be and what he wants to do, and very, very proud of him. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's about effort and passion and find what you want to do and do it hard.
How about the other kids? Are they involved in any way?
Well, I think that, you know, they're around it as much as racing allows you around it nowadays. You know, it's just, you know, it's not like when we grew up, you know, just kids aren't as welcome around the racetrack as they, you know, they're,
yeah,
wasn't daycare when we were growing up. It's just where you were.
Does Keith want to be a trainer?
Well, I have no idea on that. I do hope that education stays important to him. You know, I think all three of them are, you know, brilliant minds, and I hope that they expand on that and stay in school as long as necessary, because but they're welcome to be a part of this every minute they want to.
Yeah, what advice do you give to him, or what do you say to him if he comes to you and says, Dad, I love what you do, you're my hero, I want to follow in your footsteps?
Well, I mean, that conversation hasn't been happening. He's just welcome to be a part of it on as much as he wants to, as well as Darren and Eric the same way. And I do think, you know, life's about finding what your passion is, but I don't think it needs to be limited to any one thing.
You know, one thing, Steve Asmussen's passion has always been horse racing. He's with me tonight on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Steve, let's talk about those two Eclipse Awards, 2008, 2009. Take me back to that, hearing your name called for the first one in 2008.
Wow. You know, Cash had won an Eclipse for Apprentice. Oh. 78, maybe 79 or something, you know. So I'd been looking at that Eclipse Award on my mom's dining room table for quite some time, you know. So I wanted one, you know. A little sibling rivalry. You
sure.
Know? Absolutely. So in that, you know, that was, I think that's kind of neat, you know, for my parents to have two kids and both of them being Eclipse Award winners, you know, and, you know, that kind of makes, you know, not to offend anybody, that might make you Broodmare of the Year, right? Two foals, both of them in eclipses. You know, that's kind of how they label it in our game. But yeah, I hope that my parents are proud of their offspring's accomplishments.
Yeah, were you surprised to hear your name called, or did you kind of half expect it that year?
You know, that the Eclipse Awards and things of that nature are separate from why we do this. I think that, you know, there's a lot of ego in horse racing on every level of it, and that's what I think what we love is, no matter what the opinion is going in, you get a chance to prove it, and even if you get whatever kind of adoration you get because of it, you still have to do it again when you line up again. Mm-hmm. And it's not judged, you know, it's not a judged event. And
yeah,
I think, you know, the awards are judged events, so that's, yeah, everybody gets them a couple years after they deserve them.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. You mentioned seeing your brother's Eclipse Award displayed.
Right.
Where are your Eclipse Awards displayed?
In my house. My mom says I'm not near as generous as my brother is. self-parenting moment, right? You know?
Take me inside Steve Asmussen's house for a minute. What's that house look like with the Eclipse Awards and the racing memorabilia? I can only imagine.
My mom's got her downstairs and stuff. She calls it the ego room. You know, she calls it the ego room. For me, it is, you know, you get a few of those look back moments. I do travel quite a bit. You know, you'll nod off on a plane, and then when you get, you know, you get home, you can't go to sleep. I've been known to throw in Curlin's DVD or Rachel's DVD.
Really?
Yeah. You know, watch one of those, the World Cup or something like that, and you know, it'll definitely put a smile on my face.
Tell me about making that trip over to Dubai. What was that experience like?
It's almost, right now looking back, it's like a movie you saw, you know, only you were in it. You were lucky enough to be in it.
Yeah.
Curlin's the one horse that gave you a level of confidence that you couldn't find anywhere else. And it was his personality and stuff. And to have the, you know, Mr. Jackson and the whole Stone Street group and Bolton and everybody, the ownership group on Curlin, you know, give us that opportunity. But that, there was, I've never had a ride like that, you know, with that horse. When, no matter what you did with him, it gave you a level of calm and confidence that I don't think is easily attained in this sport.
And he gave you that very first Preakness Stakes victory, right back in 07. And
I feel like
that was an emotional time for you, if I remember, because your grandmother passed away, right? So that had to be a very special day on so many levels.
Right. You know, I get pretty emotional about things like that when you think back. You know, it was, as you mentioned, our first classic, you know, and that is a different level to win a classic. You know, you win a lot of races and some good races, you know, even, but you know, to win a classic is just a different level. Rainy day, you know, kind of raining when we were saddled a little bit in post parade, and then that horse won, and then it kind of opened up.
Yeah,
kind of made it different.
Yeah, and you know, Chris Curlin coming off of that big effort in the Derby, he didn't win, but he ran a huge Kentucky Derby. Take me back to that day for a minute, and that experience with that day.
You know, I don't, you know, Curlin, extremely biased, obviously, you know.
Rightfully so.
He's just so, what an amazing horse he was, and he was just capable of things that, you know, like you said, he was third in the Derby, you know, but it was just, I don't feel in circumstances like that he gets beat. It was just their day to win.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It was just their day to win. It wasn't like you get, it just how things unfold and what happens and whatnot. It just wasn't meant to be. But I do remember, you know, we ran another very nice horse in the race, Zanero, who, you know, I think he was off the board twice in his life, ever made like $1.5 million. I mean, just a very, very good horse. You know, you have Curlin. And obviously, at that point, the ownership group consisted of, you know, Padua and Stone Street and Bolton and the Midnight Cry group. And we run the Derby, and Curlin was third and goes back to the test barn. You come back, and I remember, you know, Curlin's coming out of the test, already back to the barn from the test barns, and now he's still blowing hard. You know, he hasn't even gotten to bath yet. Curlin's, you know, he's just on his toes and stuff, like he went out for exercise, and everybody wants to know, are you going to run in the Preakness? You know, you got to talk to everybody, so you're holding down. And, you know, just how he responded to things was so different, just simply different than other animals.
When did you first get the sense that he was special?
I think about probably about 4 works into training him. You know, when we first got him, getting used to him, what you wanted to do, kind of being cautious, trying to lay a little foundation here and there, and kind of time was creeping up on us a little bit. And you know, when you asked him for something, it was there at a different level than what we'd seen previously.
I've often heard that you know that a horse has that it factor very earlier in their career. True?
Well, whether you know they have that it factor or something about them is, I don't think that comes out until the level of competition. You know, I think related to boxing, don't know how tough anybody is until they get hit.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's how they respond to circumstances that other horses are not capable of responding that way. And that was the thing on Curlin that was separated him from anybody else. I mean, part of the debate is, you know, you don't want to knock another horse by measuring them or anything like that. But I just felt like if you showed him something once, you know, what level he needed to get to, he would find it within him to do better. And I think that was what was so important about him running a second time over a place, giving him the prep at Dubai, because I think training him was kind of like telling Michelangelo how to paint.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta have his attitude wanting to do it more than you need to be telling him to do it.
Hold that thought, Steve. We're going to continue to visit here. We'll continue to talk about Curlin. We're going to talk about a little filly by the name of Rachel. She was pretty special here and right here at the spa as well. I remember that day. We'll talk about all that coming up in the second half of Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale is quite simply number one. The number one ranked sale by percentage of grade one winners sold.
Holding off Lee as they come down to the finish. Constitution of the Don.
Number one by percentage of graded stakes winners sold.
Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Tonalist.
Number one by percentage of stakes winners sold.
And it's still a win, an absolutely scintillating performance today.
And the number one ranked sale by percentage of stakes horses sold, percentage of winners with earnings of more than $150,000 sold, and average earnings per starter sold. The Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale takes place August 10th and 11th in Saratoga Springs, New York, with more than 200 yearlings set to be offered, and will be followed by the Fasig Tipton New York bred sale on August 15th and 16th. Where will you be this August? Visit FasigTipton.com.
And they're off to New York. the premier stake bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Millridge has developed a stellar reputation for raising and selling racehorses and will be offering 7 quality yearlings at the upcoming Faze It Tipton Saratoga sale, representing 6 different stallions: Congrats, Distorted Humor, Elusive Quality, Quality Road, Pioneer of the Nile, and Trap Shot. Since 2005, Millridge has offered 45 yearlings at the Saratoga sale with 66% winners, 4.5% grade 1 or grade 2 winners, 16% graded placed, and 24% stakes placed. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses. Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
HRRN's Saturdays at Saratoga series continues this Saturday with the Whitney and the Test Stakes. Tune in beginning at 5 p.m. Eastern for live stakes racing from the spa.
And it's Moreno, Moreno to win the Whitney in a wire-to-wire score.
Saturdays at Saratoga, every Saturday this summer, only on HRRN. Go to horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule or to listen live. This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Calvin Burrell at the rail, getting off the rail now with Street Sense, who begins to roll the top of the stretch. It's Hard Spun, the one to catch. CP West and Street Sense is coming with the strides in the center of the track. Street Sense and Curlin now emerging to the front. Hard Spun, CP West with one for home to go. Calvin Burrell and Street Sense, the Kentucky Derby winner. Curlin, courageous and chasing home. On the outside, Curlin's courageous. Street Sense trying to hold. Final finish. It could go to Curlin. Curlin, I think, got it by another. Street Sense. Hard Spun was third. A final finish and a frantic finish there in the Preakness Stakes.
And welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Faze It Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is, of course, the show trainers listen to. And if you're listening tonight, you're hearing a pretty good one. We're talking with Steve Asmussen, who is second among all trainers in all-time wins in our sport, trailing only Dale Baird. He ranks fourth in all-time purse earnings, and we kind of went through some of the background there in the first half of the program. We got to Curlin toward the end of the first half, and you were telling me about how good this horse was and how you kind of got the sense early on that he was one of those special horses. And, boy, to be around those horses, you just pinch yourself, don't you?
Way better than that. You know, you mentioned Curlin, and you knew his talent was obvious. His fortitude, his strength, inner strength, came out over time. And to look back at him with complete admiration.
Yeah. And, of course, as we came out of that commercial break, we heard the rejoin clip of Curlin winning the Preakness in 2007. That was the first classic victory for the Asmussen barn, and it was an emotional day. It meant so much, and it was really just a prelude of what was to come with Curlin.
As you mentioned, like you said, it was his coming out on a national stage, and how good the three-year-old crop that was, that year was, you know, how they dominated the older group every time they ran against them, you know, with Street Sense and Hard Spun, and then to culminate with such a, you know, fantastic running of the classic at Monmouth. And he just, I don't think there'll ever be another one like me.
You told me in the first half of the show that when you're in a stretch like you were back in 2007, 2008, 2009, you're more surprised at the horses that get beat. So with Curlin, he didn't lose very often, but right. Which performance maybe surprised you the most?
When you look back, you're not surprised, you know, by now, when I say that now. I think the fact that he, when given an opportunity, he made things right, and that was what was so special about him. You know, you give him another shot at it, he came through. I mean, you think about a horse, most horses, when they put in a position that they don't have success, you know, from a handicapping point of view, you worry about him stepping back. I cannot think of a horse on a higher level that when he was in a position that didn't have success, he found more.
Yeah.
He knew what he was capable of. He had an internal fortitude and strength that I've not seen in another animal.
How much different is your approach with a horse the caliber of Curlin as opposed to your average everyday racehorse that's not on that level?
Well, you kind of answered your own question. You know, average every day, there is no such thing. I mean, everything is an individual, and your level of give and take changes from horse to horse. You know, you do see similarities, tendencies, that it is a very individual thing in how they respond to the amount of training, the level of competition. Just everything comes into to tweak it just to a degree.
How long does it take you, once you get a horse into your barn, to determine what's going to be best for that individual horse?
I think it changes. You know, I think that it continuously changes for each individual horse. I do think that you know, periodically things do plateau, and that is the level that you're the best level you're going to find for them, and then you try to make the most of it.
Yeah, and horses obviously can't talk, right? So we can't communicate with them in that respect. How do they communicate with a trainer?
I think as far as what they accept, I think it's just as easy as body language on people, you know, as far as, you know, you do something and they don't eat, I suggest they didn't like it. We'll go out on a limb here and say, okay, I haven't eaten for 2 days. Why not? You know, no, it wouldn't go as far as that. But, you know, I think having the confidence of knowing what a horse's good race is.
Right.
You know, if you like how he's prepared and you feel that he's in a position to show himself, gives a good effort, comes back, has shown effort, is exhausted, find the level that race belongs at. You know, not more, not less, but try to, and I think that's our job. I don't think we necessarily make anything faster or slower. Well, our job is to make sure they can do it again and that they're at a level that it pays off.
I'm going to hold your feet to the fire here for a minute, Steve, because during the commercial break, you picked up your cell phone, and on the back of your cell phone, the cover is a Dallas Cowboy cover. Now, when you look at mine, as everybody that listens to the program knows, it's a Pittsburgh Steelers cover, and you told me that you were actually at the Super Bowl when Green Bay beat the Steelers, and you said it with a smile on your face, by the way.
Well, absolutely. It was a great evening. Was able to take Julie and the boys to their first Super Bowl, right? Yeah, that was it.
I love the politically correct answer.
Yeah, exactly. That was exactly why I was, you know, being a Cowboy fan, that I was happy to see the Steelers get beaten in the Super Bowl. No other reason.
Well, you told me you didn't know who to cheer for. You were just there to enjoy the Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right.
That was it.
Steve Asmussen here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Let's fast forward from Curlin to the great Rachel Alexandra and look at her story. I can remember sitting here at Saratoga. We were doing the broadcast of the Woodward when she beat the older horses that day. And this place, as Tom Durkin said in his call, raised the rafters here at the spa. She really did.
She did. What a, you know, sitting right here, where, you know, on the apron at Saratoga, and to remember that moment. The fun part about running Rachel Alexander is you never had a horse, I never had a horse, or saw another horse run that many percentage of everybody was on her side.
Yeah.
That they wanted her to have success. And that, you know, her running in the Preakness against the boys and stuff, that just the following she had, and she went to the Haskell, you know, and beat Summerbird and Runnings and stuff, and just, you know, let the girl run. And when she won the Woodward here, we're doing the interview after the race, it was just amazing for me. As she walked to the spit box, the quarter pole here at Saratoga, from the winner's circle, as she walked, the wave of people like 15, 20 deep as she went down the racetrack that just followed her down. It was a very special moment and something that I hadn't seen in racing previously.
Yeah, people absolutely loved Rachel Alexandra.
They should have.
Yeah, and they loved the fact that she gave everything she had every time she went to the track.
Yes.
How about that Kentucky Oaks victory?
What was that? Well, it was one of those, did I just see what I thought I saw? Is that possible? You know? She's just a tremendous talent. And for her offspring run the other day and to win here and run very impressively, what memories that brought back.
Yeah, how cool was that?
It was amazing.
That's the thing. When you get to your level and you've trained so many great horses for so long, now you start to see their babies come along, right? Whether it's a horse like Curlin, that, by the way, talk about Curlin and the fast start that he's gotten off to.
Three winners opening day here.
Yeah.
Were sired by Curlin, including the winner of the two-year-old filly stake and stuff, so it was very good.
So when you go to a horse sale, you walk across the street here to Fasig Tipton, and you're looking at horses and you're looking through the catalog, are you paying extra attention to horses that are
absolutely
sons
and
or
if
daughters?
And if nothing else, out of respect, you know. Yeah. I think you interview a lot of trainers and stuff, and we all know that none of us, you know, we wouldn't be in this position if it wasn't for, you know, the tremendous opportunity we've had to be involved with truly special horses. And you're talking about Curlin and Rachel, and I just don't think you can get at a higher level than that.
How many pictures of Curlin and Rachel are in your ego room in your house?
There's every one of them you can find. Mr. Jackson, Jess, he gave me for Christmas, as well as Scott and stuff, a coffee table book of Curlin and stuff that it's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing what that horse truly is.
Yeah, just unbelievable. What's your favorite Rachel memory outside of what happened here at the Woodwork? Do you have a favorite one?
I think the Preakness, when she won the Preakness and stuff and beat the boys for the first time, everybody who talked about it, that look in their eye when they knew she could do it and she just proved it. You know, when somebody is proved right, and the excitement in which they spoke of her on that level, I think the Woodward was kind of a culmination of it. But so, you know, there was such a strong opinion on whether she could beat the boys or not, and then the Preakness allowed her to do so. I think that people really wanted to be right in that way, and the way that they spoke about it when they came up to you, that, you know, I think that really put people on her side.
And it really takes a special filly to beat the boys at that level, doesn't it?
Especially, you know, running back in 2 weeks, drawn 13 of 13, you know, we talked about horse racing and the fact that it's not a judged event. You can have all the opinion you want, but you've got to do it with everybody watching.
Yeah.
You know, and under, you know, pill drawn, you're 13. Man, we're really taking out the Colts. Couldn't they give you a little better post position? That's not how it works. That's the thing that you respect about racing. You have to perform on that day. The gates are going to open at 5:05 p.m. Be ready to run.
Bob Baffert talked about how nervous he was before the Haskell this past weekend with American Pharoah. And because of the fact that he doesn't want to disappoint anybody, and he doesn't want to disappoint not just the fans, but the horse. He doesn't want to be embarrassed for the horse.
Right.
Was there ever a sense of that with you when you led over Curlin or Rachel or one of the greats?
On the flip side, when it happens, you know, when Curlin got beat in the Classic at Santa Anita, and, you know, I just, you know, it bothered me. You know, I didn't, you know, no sleep whatsoever. Couldn't wait to get to the barn the next morning, you know, to try to express, as oddly as it is, you know, to express, you know, how proud of him you are, you know. Yep. Not to worry about it. And I mean, that moment, you know, I mean, the look in his eye, it was always him. It was never us.
Yeah.
You understand? So I understand, you know, with Bob talking about that, he didn't, you know, all the fans of American Pharoah, you want them to continue to admire that horse on that level. You don't want them to be disappointed in any way, shape, or form. But I think first most the horse, you know, do you realize how special you are? That's what you're trying to convey. And that's how it was with us with Curlin. Do you realize how special you are? And I personally believe that they knew it long before we did.
Sure, sure. As electric as the atmosphere was for the Woodward here, and you talked about walking back and the roar and the applause, and it was just kind of a wave, very much the same thing at this year's Belmont, but on a whole another level. That first Triple Crown in 37 years, and you told me the story about yourself sitting there watching it and seeing it happen, and it's surreal when it actually happens.
It is. you didn't realize how much you'd suppressed yourself of thinking because of the previous disappointments. You didn't, you know, so you're wanting it to happen, kind of expecting it to happen, but not wanting to get too far out there as far as it is. And like, you know, I had never seen that many $10 beers thrown in the air at one time in my life.
Have you ever heard that kind of a roar anywhere?
It was great to be able to, you know, have Julie and the boys there to witness a Triple Crown winner. I'd never witnessed one in person. You know, I wasn't at the races for Affirmed or anything, but to witness it in person was a very special moment. Glad that I was there for it.
Did you have a pretty good spot to watch it?
I thought every spot was perfect when it happened.
Steve Aspison on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. All right, if you're going to describe the Steve Aspison philosophy to working with horses, what is it? How do you describe your training philosophy?
Well, I think we're preparing them for what's going to happen. You know, I think that you're preparing them for the day after a race, actually. Mm-hmm. You want them to be up to what is physically expected of them and for them to be in a physical and mental position that it's not overwhelming and that they can do it again.
Tell me about a horse or maybe horses that you've done some really good work with that you're really proud of and maybe someone that's under the radar a little bit that people might not have heard of.
Well, you hope you're doing them every day. I mean, yeah. You're very much trying to do the perfect job on every single horse. You in the right position, do the right thing today, you know, being in the right spot. You know, I think that that is possible only after you've been given the opportunity with horses that were capable to do something for you you weren't capable of doing for yourself. The first one that I came across was Valid Expectations. Lovely horse that I had for the Ackerley brothers, and he had an inner strength of, when you walk through a door like you didn't know which direction to turn, he walked right through the middle of it, you know, and he knew where to be. He was my first stakes winner in Arkansas, I think my first stakes winner in New York, my first stakes winner in Kentucky. You know, they tease me about him. It made a business card, have a trailer, will travel.
That's amazing. And again, to think that Steve Aspison was actually there at one point and to see where you are today, I use the word surreal talking about the Triple Crown. Your career and where it's ended up is, you know, surreal in some ways.
I think that
that's taking nothing away from you. That's just
it's the truth. You're not going to run for them. You're not going to. But also, I think that, you know, to get to that level, you can't take it personal.
Yep.
You realize that it is them running, we talked about, I think the most important thing is to have the confidence to know that's his good race. Where does that race belong? Not wishing you were a little better. Not just knowing that he's prepared well to run well under these circumstances, and what you get, find that spot, and that is what it is. And then, I think keep your respect for for the horses and the effort they give.
What are you most proud of in your career when you look back on it?
Family, you know, and being a part of it, you know.
Yeah, just having them by your side throughout the whole journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And how much pride it gives them collectively.
Yeah. You've also gone through your fair of highs, lows. You've gone through all of that, right? We know last year was a bit of a low point with everything that happened with the PETA allegations. You've now been absolved of all of that, and rightfully so. How difficult was that on the family to go through that?
Amazingly, as expected, or when you look back, they never wavered. I mean, that was the consistent part. How are you able to do it? It's because it's who you are. It's what you do. Tremendous amount of confidence in the fact that how we do things and what we do things. You know?
Yeah. Has Steve Aspison changed since that experience?
I think that, absolutely. It made me closer, closer to the people you love.
Yeah, and I guess that really puts everything in perspective too, doesn't it, when you go through something like that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Steve Aspison on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. One other aspect of that whole situation that happened last year was right across the street here at the Hall of Fame. You were on the ballot for the Hall of Fame. They removed your name from that. That couldn't have been easy for you either.
That's not why you do it. Not even maybe. I mean, I don't think anybody who's actually actually in it wouldn't trade it for the winner of the next race.
Yeah, it's all about winning races,
right?
Right.
I don't think
it'd be nice to see the plaque up there, though, wouldn't it?
I think that it will be.
You can take a picture and have it in your ego room.
No, I think it will be, so that when you're not here, your kids' kids can see who you were.
Yeah, and they can go back and look back and, right. and yeah, see everything that dad accomplished.
I don't think that it adds any motivation to anybody who does this on this level. I mean, the amount of pride that you get when a horse runs a good race, wins a good race, and the admiration those horses get, that's what it's about.
So if Steve Asmussen were going to be commissioner of thoroughbred racing, we hear this a lot, right? From a horseman's perspective, what are some of the first couple of things that you're going to work on?
how about you back the rules you pass?
Meaning what?
Just everything. We collectively need to come together. You know, we need to leave the competing for the racetrack.
Yeah, and keep horsemen on the same page.
Support the rules you pass.
Yeah.
Whatever democracy way you come up with, whatever rules you decide that you're going to race under, we need to back them.
Is horse racing in pretty good shape right now?
I think when you watch the support that horse racing has from American Pharoah, and you know, special moments like that, and the admiration that horse gets and deserves, I think that's a very good thing. I think it's like everything. Not everybody's going to like vanilla.
Yeah, see, I agree with you 100%. I actually sent out a tweet the other day where I talked about horse racing being alive and well. I don't buy the fact that racing is dead, because of the fact that if you put a quality product out there, people will come and people will enjoy it, and they love this sport. They love our game.
Well, I can only speak for myself and how much I enjoy it, and how much my family enjoys it. But, I mean, I'm sure that things that other people are into aren't for me.
Has the game changed significantly since you got involved back in the late 80s?
It definitely has. It definitely has. You know, with simulcasting and other forms of revenue and stuff, it seems way bigger business than it used to be.
How often will you make it back home to the family ranch?
Not near enough, but a couple of times a year, and Julie's just great about visiting and keeping the kids a part of involved. And
you told me in the first half of the program how close you are with your mom and your dad, and how big of a supporter they've been for you. So when you do pull off some of these big wins, are they the first one to text you?
Hopefully they're there. Hopefully they're there to hug you. You know, text me, hug me. You know, that's what I think, that with some of the success we've had, you know, mom and dad have been at the races a lot more. And,
yeah.
You know, for the moments, and we need those.
Yeah, it's great to have that support of your family, and I know you're a huge family person, and that's first and foremost for the Steve Asmussen barn, isn't it?
Like I said, just who my parents are, and the, you know, what tremendous horsemen they are and what people they are, just hopefully I can make them proud.
All right, let's go back to some of the other notable names that you've been around, because there's Ben Curlin, there's Ben Rachel, we talked about them, and then there was a little filly that I really like by the name of My Miss Aurelia, and she gave you a Breeders' Cup victory as well. Tell me a little bit about her.
Broker Main, you know, Stone Street homebred, and, first Clips champion for Stone Street that was a homebred for me.
Oh, that's special.
Right, and she, tremendous talent. You know, she won Broker Maiden here, won the Adirondack in a, very competitive race, dominated the Frisette, and then the Breeders' Cup Juvenile on Eric, my youngest birthday,
yeah.
and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
On his sixth birthday, so he thought that happened for him, of course. Which, just a very special filly. Then her, winning the Eclipse Champion 2-year-old filly. Just a great talent.
Last year we saw a pretty special filly. You kind of have a way with the ladies, right? My Miss Aurelia, Rachel, untappable last year.
The first millionaire we had, when she went over $1 million here winning the Ballerina, was a great race mare named Lady Tack for the Heidelbros. And the Heidelbros were, very instrumental to get us to this level. You know, we were winning races in the Midwest and doing well. But, success at Saratoga came with, Mr. Heidelbros' help. First with Cashier's Dream winning the Spinaway here. And then as Lady Tack being, she won the test here as a three-year-old filly, came back as a four-year-old filly, won the Ballerina. That was the first horse, first earner we had to go over $1 million. And, you know, wow. She was 120 and 4/7/8 here in the test.
Yeah,
she was,
I remember that.
Fast.
Yeah.
That was fast as a horse could be. So, you know, and then, like you said, Untappable being a homebred of the Winchells and how much the Winchell family has meant to my entire family, you know, so many good horses started there in Laredo that came from the Winchell breeding program, and then for her to attain the success of the Oaks and the Breeders' Cup and win an Eclipse was very special.
So what does the future hold for Steve Asmussen?
It feels great. I mean, it definitely feels like the stars are aligning again, and that very positive going forward with enough, have gotten, you know, just tremendous opportunity. Love the two-year-olds that we have this year and how good they are and how well they're doing.
You mentioned some of the names like Heilig Bro, and we've talked about Jess Jackson and Stone Street. What's the key for a trainer maintaining that relationship with their owners?
Honesty and effort. You know, you not everything's going to work out the way you want it to, but I think that them being part of the journey and part of the process offers a more, you know, more reward for them as well.
And it helps when you have owners like that that understand the game, right?
Well, yes, Winchell's owning a 50% of Tappet definitely helps a man's success. You know, best sire to come along, if not ever, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah, unbelievable. Steve Asmussen on Trainer Talk presented by Faze & Titton. Steve, I told you I always kind of like to wrap things up by asking trainers what they like to do outside of horse racing. And most trainers will sit here and they'll tell me, well, horse racing's it. But I know with the kids and everything, there's got to be some other things that when you get away, you like to do something else.
You know, here, Saratoga allows an opportunity to be in the summer and the kids out of school, that we can all be together and stuff, and just, you know, very much enjoy the opportunity to spend some, you know, some time on the lake with Julie and Keith, Darren and Eric, the boys and stuff. It's, you know, these are memories we'll have forever, and how special the summers are here in Saratoga.
How often does Cash get to come to your races? We talked about your mom and dad.
He comes in every once in a while. Cash will surprise you when he shows up. You know, Martin, that looks a lot like my brother. You
know? He doesn't call. He just shows up.
Oh, yeah, he's more than welcome. Yeah, absolutely. He's more than welcome. And there is no better company in the world than Cash.
So what's he doing right now?
He's at my mom and dad's place in Laredo as well. It's his place as well.
Yeah.
And starting some yearlings, selling a few two-year-olds. Just doing what he is, enjoying horses, being around horses, and just being a part of it.
Is he still getting on them?
Yes, absolutely.
So, okay. Yeah. So he breaks everything himself?
Well, he has help, of course.
Sure.
You know, but he is... He's my father's son. You know, they are two of the greatest horsemen you'll ever be around.
How old is your dad now?
74.
Is he still getting on horses as well?
Yes, he is. I heard the best answer to that. You know, 74 getting on horses, and the babies always has. And we were at the Keeneland sale last year, a couple years ago, and somebody asked him, "You still getting on horses?" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "How do you do that?" He said, "It's not a big deal if you did it yesterday." I mean, if you think about it, you know, it isn't. Keep doing what you do.
That's a great answer. And you said he rode for 50 years, so he's no
until he was in his 50s. Until he was in his 50s.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, we talked in the first half of the program about Cash and his success. What made him such a good jockey when he was riding?
Well, I think the opportunity that we didn't, you know, as kids, we didn't realize how fortunate we were. You don't know that not every other kid's getting that chance, you know, going to the barn, you know, 7 days a week to be around that quality of horseman as my father is, with the access to the horses that we were lucky enough to be around.
Yeah.
You know, with Cash, I think the access had a lot to do with it, but he's got a talent that he was just born with, you know.
Yeah.
I think that he obviously got from Dad.
Did you go to the track and watch him ride often?
Not enough. I mean, back then you worked.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but I was fortunate enough to be in the race, be in the grandstand for some nice wins and to watch him ride and stuff. And
that's awesome.
Wasn't, you know, being his younger brother and stuff, I'm 4 years younger than he is. I wasn't surprised by it. I mean, that's just who he is.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve Asmussen here on Trainer Talk presented by Faze & Titton. Steve, as always, really do appreciate the time. It's been amazing to hear your story. I feel like we could have gone on and talked about so many of those other horses for a long time as well, but really do appreciate it. Continued success moving forward.
You're a great ambassador for the sport, class act, and really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Steve Asmussen here on Trainer Talk. Presented by Fasig Tipton, like all of our guests who appear on the program, he will receive a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors. That's Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get those out to him. And, boy, what a visit. Enjoyable. Going all the way back to South Dakota. And, of course, most of those early days spent in Texas. But on track. Dale Baird, the next one for Steve Asmussen, who knows? It's been an amazing run. Amazing show. My thanks to Steve Asmussen, to our producer Lee Delapina back in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. If you missed any portion of the show, go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast available for you later on this evening. For Lee, for Steve Asmussen, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.